closer.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
There it is, and Eric is back. This is episode number 83, the Eric Gagne Boston Red Sox episode. Eric Marino.
I love the Red Sox here and there, and Gagne was very good, but now we're at 83. Jeez. I mean, we're really going to talk about 83. Who's better than receiver Spider-Man himself, Andre Reed, who, of course, had his house burned down in Atlanta by Left Eye of TLC. What? I mean, don't go chasing waterfalls, and don't go chasing Andre Reed. That's what I'm saying. Go burn down the house.
That was a crazy... So, but I will say, Gagne burned down his own house professionally in the sense of being listed in the Mitchell Report Cy Young Award winner in 2003. A lot of people forget that. That was right before I got to L.A., but I remember my first few Dodgers years. You would go to the game.
He was a monster, but he also gave up a very important in the gave up a dinger, I believe, in the or gave up a run when he was basically untouchable in '83, except for the All-Star game where he was very touchable.
Well, ultimately all of his success boiled down to steroids, and by the time he got to Boston in 2007, the testing was in the league at that point. I mean,
yeah.
Plus, he was Canadian. I think he ended up retiring in the Independent League somewhere in Canada, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds great. That'd be a great place to retire.
Yep. Oh, wait, here it is. In 2009, Gagne announced he had signed with the Quebec Capitals of the Independent Can-Am League, the Canadian American League, as a pitcher / coach.
Oh, great. He's like a player coach, which we have a certain fondness for player coaches here at Sportsaholics. We sure do. From Bill Russell, Ted Williams, all the way down. If you played and coached at the same time, which always Charles Barkley had done it.
I don't know if it was official. I'd say Jacques Vaughn in Golden State was kind of a player coach at the end of his career. And he got his opportunity to coach in Orlando and failed miserably, unfortunately. Thought he was going to be a better coach than that, but I think it was a physique thing. I think if a player's too small in the NBA, the player for him just loses a little bit of respect. Even if they played in the league, I think it's an actual physical size thing. You can't, look at Avery Johnson. He's had some success, but he's bounced around a lot too. And I think it's just because he sounds like a mouse when he talks.
It is very funny to listen to him talk. He's one of those people I enjoy more and more. But it's also somewhat as a cartoon character. I enjoy him. I want him to definitely do cartoon voices.
I mean, look at Isaiah Thomas. Remove a basketball from his hand, and what does he do? He fucks everything up, no matter what it is. If he's a GM, bombing. Owner, bombing. Manager, coach, doing horrible. Put a basketball in his hand? Hall of Famer. Potential Dream Team member if he doesn't. He's not an asshole. Doesn't piss off Michael Jordan.
But he is an asshole. That's the thing. He is an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Even if Larry Bird is a bigger asshole, Larry Bird is my asshole, and I enjoyed that Larry Bird, took the ball away from Isaiah after Isaiah, came in and coached the Pacers and took a championship-going team to failure, basically, to out of the playoffs. And then Larry Bird stole the ball from Isaiah again, which was great.
Well... Which, you brought up the topic of balls, and you got Tom Brady now bouncing around. I've just shut that whole thing off. What update me? Update us, because we're all...
We'll all know more August 31st, which is just a few days away from when we record this. But, it's in front of a federal judge, and the federal judge is really encouraging the two sides to come to some sort of agreement. There's lots of buzzes. I mean, the NFL has gone way out of their way to slam the good name of Tom Brady, which I have to say, Sheezer, first of all, free Brady. #FreeBrady. Second of all, I want to talk about the curse of Tom Brady. Since the NFL has wrongly attacked our golden boy, Tom Brady, I'll say this. Juan Pierre-Paul of the New York Jets, New York Giants, blew his finger off. Geno Smith of the New York Jets, he had his jaw broken because he owed another player $600, and he's out for 10 weeks.
The other player for the Buccaneers.
Jordy Nelson, Kelvin Benjamin of the Packers and Panthers, respectively, they are now both out for the season. And here's what I'm saying. Until the NFL stops attacking Tom Brady, besmirching the good man's name and trying to suspend him for games he should not be suspended for, the curse of Tom Brady is upon the league, and your team, one of the other 31 teams, shall be visited by the curse of Brady, and one of your players, probably one of your stars, will be taken from you. This has happened to the Giants, this has happened to the Jets, this has now happened to the Packers and the Panthers. It's coming for you. It's coming for you.
So
free Brady, or feel the wrath of the curse of Brady. You will lose a star player until Tom Brady is freed.
So you kind of have like a kind of like a Scrooge meets Final Destiny kind of a thing going here.
Yep, there is definitely some sort of karma is a bitch, and it's coming for your star player until Tom Brady is freed. And also, I'd like to say something to all those Indianapolis Colts fans out there that started this whole thing, and now Reggie Wayne has signed with the Patriots, because I think all the Colts fans out there, well, they're feeling a little about one way about their old star, Reggie Wayne, being a Patriot. They're feeling deflated, cheese. That's right, they're feeling deflated.
Well, Colts fans can't say shit. Their owner is just all over the place. I'm not going to slander him because he's a good friend of our buddy Court McCowns, and I don't want to,
yeah,
you know.
We won't say too many other things, but he certainly has his own glass house to Windex very a lot.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Windex that glass house a lot.
Yeah, just Google him and Colts owner and see what comes up. Jim Irsay, it'll be one. You look at the guy, and you're like, man, just by his face, you're like, he lives a good life. You know, he's seen some things.
Yeah.
But yeah, Colts fans, don't worry. You'll get your Super Bowl. Broncos fans, I don't want to hear it. Manning is like that old car that you're just you can make it home. Last family trip, Manning. We're only 100 miles from home. It was a great run. Just don't break down before we get home. And he's
Caesar, have you heard the news from Denver?
No.
Hey, man, he can't feel the end of his fingertips. He can't feel the end of his fingertips.
That's going back to the spine, I'm assuming, you know, that injury.
It's your nervous system. How are you going to be able to throw the ball, especially it's not going to get better in December. It's like doctors are saying him not to expect the feeling to come back anytime soon. We're talking about touch. We're talking about feel. We're talking about your nervous system where he already has four neck operation, and guess what? Peyton, it's time to retire. When you can't feel the end of your fingertips, it's time to retire. Because this is why Favre retired. It's because it's not about whether or not you can play in September and October. It's whether or not your body can stand the beating of 18 weeks of professional football. Because that's what happened to Peyton Manning last year. He had that massive quad injury in his leg with that massive Charlie horse. And then guess what? He couldn't get the zip on the ball. He's not doing what he's wanting to do. He's not able to do what he can do in September and October, in December, in January. That's like you watch Favre go exactly the same way. This is how guys fade away. They, you know, in the hot, warm days, they can throw the ball around. But I can't imagine that in the cold days of December and January in Mile High Stadium that Mr. I Can't Feel My Fingers is going to get better.
Yeah.
Isn't going to get better.
In a pair of gloves, in 20 degree, with 40 mile an hour winds. It's, hopefully Osweiler's good. I'm not by any means encouraging any Broncos success, but you guys always have your Super Bowls from the 90s, you know, and that was that was awesome, you know, and you had Elway.
You had Elway.
You know,
you had
one of the greats, and I mean, the Chiefs, yeah, they had Montana, but we all know Montana's a 49er. You know, there's no Chiefs Montana highlights except for him at a podium saying, I'm done. And then there's some Chiefs stuff hanging around. That's pretty much
only. To me, what Montana did with the Chiefs and Marcus Allen, to me, proves that he could have won a fifth ring with the 49ers. And the 49ers didn't necessarily make the right transition when they went with Steve Young. I'm saying you probably get that fifth ring regardless. And maybe you got better playoff run with Young. But I think you get it anyway. It's sort of that, like, you know, it's that Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, and, you know, you have to say the Packers made the right move. They might still get a Super Bowl with Favre, but they're alive to get one and plus with Rodgers.
Yeah, it's just I just feel sorry for Green Bay too. But they got a, it's all about the system, you know, and that's what Green Bay, luckily they have. They've got somebody's going to be able to step in. It's just opportunity. And when you breed success and routine and good work ethic and practice that day to day, like, that rubs off on everybody else. So, I mean, yeah, you lose Jordy Nelson, the 1,800 yards, the 13 touchdowns, or whatever his exact stats were, all pro stats, but someone's going to be able to fill that void. Some guy you've never heard of for the Green Bay Packers, for those of you that haven't drafted, just take a shot. Look at them all. One's probably 6'3", you know, 210. The other guy's probably 5'10", 200. Do you get the slot guy? Do you get the deep guy? I would go after the guy that is most like Jordy Nelson, so probably the slot guy. I don't even know who it is, but I'm just saying that guy's catching 1,400 yards this year. Probably has 6, maybe 7 touchdowns, not 13, because, you know, he's not going to be looked for. Yeah, but I mean,
you never know, because it's also one of those things, like, you look what happened with the Patriots and Wes Welker. It's like, you know, people drafted Amendola in the draft. They get Amendola from the Rams to replace that spot, because everyone thinks you can just plug these guys in because they play so much fantasy football. But, you know, and then, you know, people go, oh, well, Edelman did it. It's like, you know, that wasn't a given. And there's a certain point where it's like there is a difference. Like, the players do make a difference in the system. Gronkowski, a Jordan Nelson, a Welker, you know, in the peaks of their career, they're going to get that step, that inch, that open window for a Brady or a Rodgers that other people just aren't going to get.
Well,
you know, that's just not going to be open. And suddenly, you know, things are going to become intercepted, you know, and that's these things happen, man.
Well, it's part about familiarity and comfort. You know, Rodgers with Nelson, you know, I don't know, 5, 6 seasons, however they've been. So, yeah, look at his stats, 1,800, let's say 13 touchdowns, 1,800 yards. You know, those translate completely different on another team because, you know, Rodgers is looking for Nelson. They've got this secret play that they can run 5 times a year that's a guaranteed touchdown. You know what I mean? And that's the next, you know, and so that's where you lose a lot of that from team to team, and whether that's the quarterback's ability to get the ball or to even be a smart enough quarterback to run a system like that or whatever.
Or it's that third down conversion safety blanket that, you know, that's the difference of having a Ben Coates with Drew Bledsoe, a Gronkowski, a Welker. It's like there's a certain point where everyone knows you're going to go to Jordy Nelson on 3rd and 12, and they do, and you make it. But does the guy who comes in after him, and maybe he does, and maybe he becomes the next star. You know, like, you know, stars are made every day. Like, suddenly the Patriots, we all have to talk about Malcolm Butler, you know, because he saved the day during the Super Bowl, which is great.
Yeah, now the coaching staff's like,
you have to read about how he's completely replacing Darrell Revis, and then you're like, he won't be able to replace Darrell Revis.
No.
And it's, you know, whatever the preseason tells you, it's like, we'll see it during the season, and we'll decide, and it will come out.
Well, as you know, and yeah, it all plays out, you know, starting here in 3 weeks when week one kicks off. And during the preseason, though, for me, it's tradition, though the past few years it's kind of gotten away from me, but to watch Hard Knocks. Now, have you been able to catch any of that this season?
Oh, yeah. I'm deeply into that. I watched the first 2 episodes. The third episode is about to hit in about an hour from where we're recording this. And, you know, it opens great for a Patriots fan because we talk about the ring ceremony because Vince Wilfork goes and gets his championship ring.
That's
and
what
then comes back and shows it off. And you have Bill O'Brien, who's a former Patriot coach. You have Romeo Crennel, who's a former Patriot coach. Mike Vrabel, who played on the Patriots Super Bowl winning teams, especially the ones that beat the Rams. He was very key in that in one of the interceptions that helped us beat the greatest show on turf. So you have the Hoyer, Brian Hoyer, and Ryan Mallett competition at quarterback.
Which Hoyer won?
Former Tom Brady backup. So you have a lot of Patriots material running through the Houston Texans system, which is nice for Patriots to watch.
Well, I Bill O'Brien's been very impressive, and last episode I put in a couple of clips from the show. One in particular that I loved was when he's asking the players if they know who the owner is, who the owner's son is, who the COO is, you know, which I thought was great. But then the second clip is when, you know, I put in was when he's sitting with his coaches and he's like, as a franchise, we're 30 games below 500. No one gives a shit about the Houston Texans, you know, and it's just being,
yeah.
I really do feel like he's going to coach them into the playoffs, you know, and to where they could be a perennial contender. I know, you know, you mentioned Vrabel. When you're watching Brian Cushing, you're just like, man, this guy's got the best coach, one of the best linebacker coaches in the country right now, and he gets to work with the best linebacker, arguably, in the country right now. I mean, the defense, you know, obviously you got J.J. Watt, but then they added Wilfork. How's that watching Vince wearing a Houston?
I got to tell you, he's awesome. And I'm looking forward to the Texans' defense because you have Cushing, you have J.J. Watt, you have Vince Wilfork. They just got Clowney came off the unable to perform list, and he's not going to be, which I think they're going to deal with more in this episode coming up, the Week 3 episode. But, you know, he's not playing in the preseason yet. That's okay. I mean, everyone's been dying for Clowney to get in and be his, helmet knocking off self. You know, that clip from his Gamecock days.
Oh, man. Legendary.
In some ways will haunt him until he starts knocking off helmets in the NFL. You know, it's like he has great potential, but, you know, it's like, I mean, he's coming off, microfracture surgery, which anybody who follows the career of basketball players knows is very, very serious. Like, you know, this guy could be, that's like in that Greg Oden, you know, number one draft pick who never turns out anything because he ends up having damage to his legs and knees.
And that's something that they knew going in. I mean, the surgery he had, obviously he injured last year, but he had a history of that at U.S. or at South Carolina as well.
It is a USC. It is also USC.
Right. I know. It's depending on which side of the Mississippi you're on, that means different things.
Sure do.
Now, you've been traveling at all? You've been around this great country since you got back from Montreal and Boston, New York?
No, I am headed back to, I'll be heading back to the Boston and New Hampshire area in the coming week, sometime next week after I celebrate week 52 of the breakup with Lady B, one of my first guests on the show.
Now, is that buried?
A year since the breakup.
Is that buried?
It's week 51. What's that?
Is that getting buried after the 52nd week? I mean, this point, you could have...
I hear things about the new guy she's dating, and I enjoy that they're not complimentary.
Well, you know, who would have guessed?
I don't want to hear good things.
Who would have thought that ever, you know? Yeah. Well, before we got Bart Slabcorn on, a writer for the Padres. We had him on a couple episodes ago. And, you know, when we had him on previously, there was still a chance. They had a chance. You know, now, obviously, they don't. They sold off. But Bart's a writer at gaslampball.com. You can find him on Twitter at Bart Slabcorn. But before we get into that interview, just a quick reminder, guys. Go to hillbenders.com. Eric, I don't know if you saw Rolling Stone listed their album, one of the top 30 albums you have to hear in 2015.
I hear their Tommy is quite the top.
So that's exciting. And then also the Huffington Post, a write-up on them, said that that is the concert you have to see of the year. So if you had to see any concert, that would be the one to see, which I believe I've been to several. They're always entertaining. They're always fun. And I know that they're on tour right now all across the country. I know they just finished up in the East Coast. So go to hillbenders.com, guys, and check that out.
They had a great time. I had a fortunate season in Fort Collins, Colorado, and it was worth the time and effort. Great band.
And at the Comedy Store main room, but that was more of a vocal harmony kind of thing, instrument-free, all vocals. But, guys, when we get back, we'll be talking with Bart Slabcorn. We'll be talking Padres, what they can salvage, if anything, and if A.J. Preller has a future with the team next season. All right, and we are back. We have Bart Slabcorn on again. Writer at gaslampball.com. You can find him on Twitter at Bart Slabcorn. That's SLABBE K-O-R-N. Bart, how have you been, man? I know it's been a long season for a Padres fan and writer. What have you been doing with yourself this summer to stay happy?
Well, I've been checking out a lot of baseball, and obviously the Padres wish their summer had gone better on the wins and loss column, but there's still lots of great buzz around around the Padres organization with Templeton and Benito getting into the the Hall of Fame for the Padres and enjoying that Hall of Fame ceremony and thinking about the All-Star game next summer. So lots of great things to focus on for Padres fans, and we just take the best of it.
Yeah, I mean, that is exciting. It was nice. I went to a game a couple weeks ago. It was the day game against, I can't remember who it was now. Maybe the Philly. It was a Wednesday game last week, but it was very lazy. It was an awesome game. You know, it was sunny. It was perfect. But they've unveiled the big All-Star banners all around the stadium, and I like the design. And having seen what the All-Star game did in Kansas City, and then my brother lives in Cincinnati, and he was telling me about all the great stuff, you know, that came to Cincinnati with that entire weekend and all the celebrities. But it should be exciting. It'll be like a second Comic-Con almost, you know, down here, except for with sports.
Yeah, I totally agree. Major League Baseball has already talked about the great events they're going to have in San Diego throughout the year. I think it's going to start as early as February. And certainly leading up through the middle of July there with the All-Star game itself and the Fan Fest leading up to it. So it's going to be a great season next year to be a Padres fan and to enjoy the All-Star festivities all year pretty much.
No, okay. So with all that, and I'm planning on going, I'm gonna save up the $300 or $400 to either, you know, if I can get a cheap game ticket, I'll take that. Or if I just have to go to the Home Run Derby, I'll be fine with that. But it'll be fun, something to look forward to, and less than a year away already. Because now with the MLB baseball season winding down, and the last time we talked, it was right before the trade deadline, and a lot of people, there was a lot of speculation that it was just going to be a fire sale, and you know the whole team would be gone, and the exact opposite happened. Nobody moved, and in fact, I forget. There was some movement, but it was post trade deadline, correct?
So since the deadline, they have traded a couple of players. Will Venables, the biggest piece of that, Will Venables went to the Rangers for two players. We just found out late last week who the player is to be named later. Not any huge pieces. A journeyman pitcher, the player to be named later, who's had not very much success in the major league level at least, but the Padres front office obviously see something in him that they believe they could get some value out of that trade. We wish the best for Will Venable, obviously a fan favorite, a guy who meant a lot to this community, and I'm sure will do great things, hopefully, in the Rangers organization. But also a guy, I think, critically when you look at it, which is sort of emblematic of the Padres' last decade, which is a team that never really lived up to potential. I think everybody always felt like Will Venable was on the verge of a breakout season, and he never really put up those numbers. And so I think it's good for Will to get a change of scenery, and it's probably a good change of philosophy, a good change of culture for the Padres organization to get folks in here with a winning mentality and people who can put up some numbers on the field.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right about the fan favorite. When you would go to a game at Petco, you would see a shocking amount of Will Venable jerseys. It was a lot of the people that were right, like, you know what, I'm going to get the Venable jersey now. That way when he's really good, I can say, hey, I got that Venable jersey back when he was just a rookie or a second year. But yeah, you're right. It just never quite clicked, you know, for whatever reason. But, you know, it's a fresh start in Texas. And then what did you say? What was the other move they made?
Well, of course, at the deadline, they acquired a pitcher, a left-handed pitcher for the bullpen named Rozinski. I'm going to mispronounce that, but he's done fairly well in his first few outings since then, since being acquired. So, they acquired some. That was the only real move that they made. I think the Padres front office position was that there really wasn't a lot of value available for the people that they were trying to move. And their position was that if they couldn't get value for the pieces that they were trying to offer, that they weren't going to make a move out of desperation. And I think a lot of fans appreciate that.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's been along with obviously the record, and it's kind of just, let's stick with these guys and let's just see where it, I mean, it, MLB Network up until I think 3 or 4 days ago. Still, I mean, it was kind of funny, but they had them, you know, still up on the wild card. It's like, oh, they're only 10 games out. And even then you're like, oh, maybe they could put something together. But yeah, it's and then you had the Will Myers injury, which it's beginning to, years ago, I thought that was going to be the guy, you know, and it just with all these injuries now, it just looks like it's just not really ever going to happen. So I'm wondering if maybe, you know, that's some potential trade bait in the future. I was wondering if Shields might have been shipped. I was kind of surprised, honestly, that he wasn't. Was that ever a concern of yours?
I'm sure they definitely were shopping him towards the deadline. You didn't really see a whole lot. I mean, Johnny Cueto, you know, moved. David Price moved. A lot given up. I think folks were higher on those two pitchers in terms of their value to an organization coming down the stretch. They're both having much better seasons than James Shields. They both got, you know, a lot of experience as well. And so is James Shields, obviously. But I think they just commanded a lot more and probably just sucked all the oxygen out of the room, so to speak, in terms of what was available for that type of a player at the deadline in terms of acquisitions. And so, I think it's hard to get accurate reporting on who's cleared waivers, but it seems consensus that James Shields has cleared the trade waivers and is available. But I don't know that there's going to be the trade available that they want necessarily, because James Shields really has had a subpar season for James Shields standards. And so I'm not sure that they're going to get what they consider to be trade value or market value for James at this point. So.
Yeah, I mean, his stats, I mean, and to defend James Shields, you know, it's, you know, whether it's run support, I mean, he does pitch at Petco, which, you know, saves a few runs here and there, you know, with the size. But, you know, I think he's just, you know, with what I saw him do, you know, last season, he just always seems like in Tampa Bay before that he's one of those that can kind of kick a fire under his ass whenever he needs to and just kind of elevate his game. But I mean, because there was one stretch where he had started, wasn't it 12 or 13 consecutive games without a loss? I mean, he didn't win all of those games, but, you know, the Padres, you know, won, or he didn't lose. And that's consistency, which is hard to find, you know, in starting rotation.
I think he got 7-0 or something like that, but he's definitely got a leadership mentality behind him. He's definitely carried this team, you know, from a leadership standpoint, and he's definitely been a character guy in the clubhouse. And I know when the managerial change took place between Bud Black and Pat Murphy, I know a lot of players weren't happy about that in the locker room. And I know that James Shields put up a sign that said, if you're not happy about it, then play better. And that sort of tells you everything that you need to know about James Shields' character and his accountability. So he's definitely, you know, a guy you want in your clubhouse and a guy that you can build around. And he wants to be here, and I think he wants to be part of the solution rather than just kind of skating out of town.
Yeah, and I mean, he's just been a leader wherever he's gone. And then what about the front office leadership? Is Preller, when his, you know, big moves last offseason, maybe his not doing anything during the trade deadline, or maybe are you happy with what he's done? Are you satisfied? Does he still do you still have faith in him? Do you trust his judgment?
I think there's reason to question his baseball judgment at this point, and I think that goes all the way to Mike D and Jerome Fowler and Peter Seidler and the ownership group. I mean, I think that you have to ask the question at this point of whether they're committed to putting a winning baseball team on the field or whether they're more interested in sort of selling the sizzle, you know, rather than the steak. And I think you can point to some fairly specific choices that they've made, starting with the international free agency market last summer. They missed on Yasmani Tomas. They were never, and he's made a very big difference to the Arizona Diamondbacks season. He's been an excellent player for them, and that would have been a huge get if they could have, you know, landed him from the international market. And we were told that A.J. Preller's strength was in the international market from his days in Texas. Same thing, they never made a very serious run at shortstop Kang he's made a big difference to the Pittsburgh Pirates this season and been a key part of their offense.
Right, yeah.
Well, and shortstop is a big part of what we're missing. So, you know, they landed a Korean relief pitcher, but they weren't able to sign him. And so the international market last summer or last offseason was a flop. And then you look at this summer and the international signing period this summer, and the Dodgers and the Giants both had much better international signing classes than we did. And they put some distance between us in terms of the prospects that they got. The Dodgers signed two very important international free agents, and the Giants signed the number three overall international free agent this summer. So, again, A.J. Preller's team got beat, you know, this year. Maybe they think they're going to do better in the future, that they had a better class coming next year. But in the immediate term, they got beat. You look at this year's draft class, and the top two pitchers that they selected out of, you know, high school players have not pitched very well in the Arizona Rookie League. They both did lit up a little bit down in the Arizona Rookie League. So the draft picks this year, again, suspect. You look at what the moves they weren't able to come through with at the trade deadline and since the trade deadline. But I think from a baseball standpoint, you can point to some things like, you know, allowing Will Middlebrooks to be the choice at third base instead of Yan Hervis Solarte, a choice that we can see now from the last couple of weeks. You know, Yan Hervis Solarte really brings a lot to the table offensively, and probably better defensive player than Will Middlebrooks as well. So I think you can point to a lot of baseball decisions in the last 12 months that haven't really been very good decisions. And I think that this team, if they're going to stick around, needs to make better baseball decisions. You've got guys on the market right now, like Ben Cherington out of Boston, and for a while there you have Dave Dombrowski after he left Detroit. Whether they would have considered coming to a place like San Diego, I'm not sure. But I think if this team or if this ownership group was really serious about building a winning baseball team, those are the kinds of general managers that they would be looking at, and types of baseball decisions that they've made over their career.
Well, it seemed like he kind of stormed on the scene and just kind of his whole persona. It was just like, I'm a crazy guy. And everyone's just like, ah, he's a crazy guy. He does crazy stuff. And they just kind of wrote it off as that. And there was no accountability. I guess the time for accountability hadn't come yet because the season hadn't played out. But now that time is kind of come, you know, it'll be interesting in the game of poker that is baseball, you know, what he's hiding, you know, under his sleeves or what he can, you know, because – obviously, he's probably negotiated with every franchise in Major League Baseball. So, you know, who knows where his friends are, where he's got some favors lying around. But, you know, this is a great base. San Diego is a great baseball city. The fans are great. You know, if you're downtown hours before the game, you'll see thousands of people walking around, you know, in Padres stuff, ready, getting excited for the game. And so, I mean, if any city deserves a winning franchise, it is San Diego. And there's a lot of baseball history, you know, going back, obviously, you know, to Ted Williams in the 30s in the Pacific Coast League. And so it would be nice if there was a little bit more stability, because, and that's a big stadium, you know, I'm pretty sure they could get close to 38,000-40,000 people, you know, if they had a good quality product that they were putting out, you know, week to week.
Well, they're going to have a chance, you know, to re-sign Justin Upton, and they're going to have an opportunity to add to a really good core of players. If Justin Upton doesn't sign, then they're going to have an opportunity to move Will Myers to the corner outfield spot, which might suit him a little bit better.
Yeah, I think so.
Still got some strong prospects. We're going to see Hunter Renfroe in September. He's hit 3 home runs in his first five games at AAA, so he's proven that he can hit some advanced pitching a little bit better. If he can hit off-speed pitching at the Major League level, then there's no limit to what Hunter Renfroe can do. He's got a big arm and a lot of speed. Ryan Liriano is still down there. They've got some exciting shortstop prospects, and Rudy Giron and Jose Rondon. So there's definitely room to be optimistic. This is a good core, a group of guys. You have to think that Cashner and Ross will pitch better than this next year.
Yeah, you would hope.
It's an aberration for them. Colin Ray has looked good in his first few starts. As a rookie here, getting a cup of coffee here at the end of the season. So you kind of have, there's a lot of room for optimism. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the future can only be brighter, you hope, than this season. And hopefully they can at least finish strong. Like you mentioned, Ray, you know, got off to a 2-0 start, ran into the Cardinals on Sunday, I believe, you know, wasn't quite as successful. But like you mentioned, you know, you're picking up quality innings, you're facing quality at bats. And that's a guy that, you know, who knows, maybe he's the number 3, number 4 guy next year. you know, if he picks it up a little bit. But yeah. Bart, thanks again for your time. Listeners, you can find his work at gaslampball.com. And also, if you look him up on Twitter, that's Bart, B-A-R-T, Slabcorn, S-L-A-B-B-E-K-O-R-N. Bart, thanks for your time, man. And we'll catch up to you here at the end of the season, get your thoughts on kind of the NL West and, you know, who you think might make it eventually to the series.
Thanks, John. It's gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah. Oh man, I can't wait. It's. I mean, it's up in the air right now. I think there was, 10 or 12 teams within 5 games of the wild card, something like that. But that's what that second wild card does. It really opens it up for everybody, and that's what's helping to bring baseball back from coast to coast.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it.
All right, well, Bart, take care, and we'll talk to you soon. All right.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Come on, give me the grass, and neither the grass, and neither the real, real, real thing. The real thing. And I'm a sense of me, oh, now me, oh, yay. And I'm a sense of me, oh, now me, sense. And I'm a sense of me, oh, now me, sense. Whoa, see, whoa, ooh. Hey, Babylon, you don't like ganja man, but we bring the foreign currency and the island.
Thank you, Bart. As mentioned, go to gaslampball.com, at Bart Slabcorn on Twitter. And guys, thanks for the feedback last week with the true. Eric, while you were gone, we talked about what it really, bandwagon Royals fans, because that's a question I get now when I travel. How long you like the Royals? And my answer was since 1987 when I met Jim Eisenreich and got his autograph. So, you know, I've got a very solid and concrete answer. But, you know, it's like what I told Chris Kamler was that in this day and age, you can go back on Facebook and just see who's posting about the Royals, see who was the fan, you know, go back to 2010 and see if they've got anything posted about baseball the entire year. Go to 2015 and see if every other one of their posts is about baseball this year. You're not
afraid to call everyone out. I get that.
No, exactly. But more importantly, I'm tired of being called out. It's like, who cares? You know, the team is winning. Just accept it. You can't sit anywhere you want anymore at the baseball at Kauffman Stadium. You actually have to sit in the seat you bought. Sorry.
Yeah. By the way, I have to give you give a shout out to the Straight Outta Kauffman, one of my favorite versions of the Straight Outta Compton meme. I give all the guys out there for the Chippy Royals fans out there, good on you. Good on you for the Straight Outta Kauffman.
And
I enjoy that meme tremendous.
And that was several months before the Straight Outta Compton meme off on Instagram and Facebook last week.
Right. You guys are into it before anybody. Well, I always respect that.
And all that took was 3 consecutive Yordano Ventura starts that led to 3 consecutive brawls.
Yeah, they're chippy, man.
They were.
Which we love.
It's coming around. They're coming around now. But how's the listeners? Guys, if you're in, before I get into the show, go up. Eric's weekly show at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room, Sunday nights. If you're in Los Angeles, creep down to the Comedy Store. 8433 Sunset, I believe. Is that the address?
Yes, Sunset. Sunday nights, 11 to 1 in the Belly Room of the world-famous Comedy Store. Also, guys can follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Periscope. You guys can watch the show live, 11 to 1. Sometimes we go a little bit over on the specific time. And you know, for the next day, it is on, you can replay it for the next 24 hours.
And that's on
so
Periscope.
You guys can, so Sunday nights and on a Monday replay, you can find that on Periscope. And please watch. We enjoy that tremendously.
Yeah, and then if you're a comic, you're welcome to go down there, get up on stage, have a good time.
Trying to get as many people on stage as possible. I also want to give out a shout-out to Klee and Ed. The Ed and Klee Show is a podcast that started right there in the show of Go Up. I think they're on episode 13. So check out Klee and Ed, the Ed and Klee Show, as a podcast. And also a shout-out to Verbal Violence, the podcast of The Roast Battle, which is every Tuesday night. Run by Brian Moses and Coach T. So if you like that roast battle, which is also on Periscope, that's Tuesday nights after 11 Pacific time, and you can listen to it in podcast form on Verbal Violence. And Roast Battle is every Tuesday night on Periscope.
And that's one of those things where you're going to see this on mainstream TV in the coming, hopefully in the coming year. But, you know, who knows but how long it'll take. But this is, you're going to see a lot of comics that you actually will recognize that you've seen on TV. But more importantly, you're going to see a lot of the people that you're going to start seeing on TV that are going to start.
Well, last week, I'll tell you this, I got to go up in front of comedy legend and icon, Jim Carrey. I got to perform in front of Jim Carrey. I had him slapping the table and laughing at my heartbreak and pain as I did my week 50 in front of the Roast Battle crowd, which I really appreciate the Roast Battle for. And that was, and then he stayed, Jim Carrey's going to be doing, they're adapting the book I'm Dying Up Here, which is a bunch of Comedy Store stories, into an HBO, into a pilot. And Jim Carrey was evidently there last Tuesday night, hang out all night. He told a lot of funny stories to guys in the parking lot. And
yeah.
And
that's a great book.
Night.
That's a good read. And, you know, even if you're not a comedy fan, it's tragic, really. I mean, it's about Steve Lubetkin.
It's a compelling story of people, absolutely.
And, you know, it's this guy who moves to Hollywood to fulfill his dreams. He somehow builds this equation of comedy where he had written this script and he had tested it and it got a certain amount of laughs per minute. So he had figured out this equation and he had watched all these famous comedy movies and figured out this formula where, well, this movie only got 12 laughs per minute and mine gets 20, you know? And so he thought for sure he was going to have a hit. No one bought it. Jumps off the Hyatt, tries to jump and land on the Comedy Store. Did not do physics very well in physics in high school or college or
he didn't make it on a whole lot of levels. He didn't make his dreams come true. He didn't make his tragic death come true. He was off on a lot of marks.
But almost 40 years later now, and that's just how it turns. Like, his name is iconic in the comedy community. If you stay Steve Lubetkin, especially in Los Angeles, people more often than not, you know, are going to know what you're talking about, whether the older guys actually knew him personally, which in some cases, you know, in Argus, you know, some of those older guys actually did know him, you know, and were there or are in the book, you know, with the strike and talking about all that stuff, you know, your Letterman, your Leno, those guys knew him, you know, on some level, whether they were good friends or not, I'm not sure. But the book is fantastic, and it shows a great behind-the-scenes look, not only at the Comedy Store, but the L.A. kind of comedy scene, which really boomed when The Tonight Show moved to Los Angeles in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
And it went from New York to L.A. overnight, and that's the only way you got on TV was if an NBC scout saw you. And I believe it was Freddie Prinze Jr., if not Freddie Prinze, or I'm sorry, Freddie Prinze, or he was one of the first couple, but as the story went, he showed up to L.A. 7 days later or something like that. He's on The Tonight Show, and then 2 days after that, he's, you know, a star for the until he took his own life 3 years later when he was like 20, you know. And so it's a great book. And so to see this being adapted into I'm glad it's a series and not just a one-off two-hour thing. Because then it has a chance to live and breathe and kind of go on, you know, hopefully for 4 or 5 years. I mean, it can go a lot of ways. I've heard a lot about the script. I've heard some good close friends of ours might possibly get a chance to participate in the making of it, which would be exciting.
That'd be great. I actually know, I believe the writer is Dave Fabot, who is a writer I worked with on my early days of Ellen DeGeneres. When my first year, I worked with Dave Fabot. So good luck to Jim Carrey and writer Dave Fabot, and hopefully we'll talk to them more.
Absolutely. Maybe we can have, if some of our boys get cast in this thing, we'll have actual people from the show on. How about that? That'd be even better.
We'll try that.
Absolutely. Well, any closing words before we depart this week? It's good to have you back, man. I'm glad. It's good to hear your voice.
It's nice to be part of it. I just thank everybody for listening. Send us questions. Gmail us at sportsologist@gmail.com. If you have any questions, find us on Facebook and Twitter. I will be doing more. I'll participate more in my life. And with you guys, and free Tom Brady. Brady.
That's what I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to challenge you on Twitter. Go on Twitter, do a #FreeBrady, #FreeTomBrady, and then it'll get retweeted by the Sportsaholics account.
All right.
Deal?
Yeah.
All right. Hashtag Free Brady.
That's Odat Marino on Twitter. You'll be seeing it soon. Damn. I'll talk to you guys all later. Stay obsessed, Keith.
Love you guys.
Shout!